Welcome to Imperfect Momming. Our children are constantly looking to us for examples. The term role model doesn't quite cut it here. We are shaping their worldview with every move we make. You see, it's not in the lectures we give or moments where we are actively attempting to teach them. It's in the micro movements we make, the unconscious ways in which we navigate life. We are constantly teaching our children how to show up for themselves, their friends, their future partners, and even their future children. So what can we do to ensure we are raising thoughtful, compassionate, self-aware human beings? We have to become them ourselves. No one is perfect, but we can still all be better, and it starts with self-healing. Let's get to it. Welcome back to Imperfect Momming, and we have a very special guest today, Vicky Lynn. Welcome to Imperfect Momming.
Thanks for having me.
And then I was wondering if I said your name wrong.
Yeah, right.
The number of people that I'm like butchering their name or forgetting their name, or it's just, you know how with yep. names, like somebody introduces themselves and then it's like you immediately forget their name.
Yes, all the time.
I'm so glad I'm not alone. So tell us who you are and what you do.
So I'm a single mama, 25-year survivor of domestic violence, and entrepreneur, and just a woman that is on fire to help other women that are still in the fire, where they're co-parenting, sharing custody with their abuser, and their kids are being hurt, and they're still being hurt. And I just, when I was in the middle of my own custody battle and sharing custody, and it was hell on earth for my daughter and me, I wrote in my journal multiple times, I can't wait until I'm through this and I can help other moms, other women. So that is who I am. That is what I do.
That's a really incredible thing that you just shared, that you were in it and thinking, I can't wait to get through this so that I can help other people. I don't know if, and nobody's ever said that. I never thought that. But it's like where I was through it, and then I see other people going through it, and I'm like, okay, I want to help those people because I'm on the other side. But you were in the middle of it with the thought of, I can't wait to help other people. That's incredible.
Thanks. I think that it was so horrific that I kept thinking, there's no way this is just for us. Like, no way, you know? And so I also think it was an anchor for me to have some kind of hope that there would be an end and that, you know, I would be healed and that we would be safe and she wouldn't have to be subject to being raised by someone who was abusive. So I think it was all of those things together.
Yeah. And it makes sense that that was something that was getting you through, and, you know, that it's, because it's hard when you're in, I haven't specifically been in that situation, but I've been in situations where it's like, ugh, and I can't wait till it's over and all of that. But, you know, and I believe now that, you know, a lot of the things that we go through are so that we can help other people. My new phrase that I haven't created a banner for yet, but I'm gonna, is live, learn, teach. Because we always talk about live and learn, but when you go past live and learn to the teaching, it's, you're helping other people shorten their learning curve and shorten their time in abuse. Like, anybody listening to this episode is going to hear you and be inspired and hopefully contact you. And how can I get out of my situation? That would be the ultimate goal.
Right. And just to the whole point of your podcast is to then teach our kids so that they don't repeat those types of cycles in their life.
Yeah, because it's monkey see, monkey do. That's what we are, human race. Like, we're definitely, you know, we're learning from watching. And when
we're saying, when we're living in a situation, we're essentially saying this is okay. This is how you're supposed to be treated, and this is how you're supposed to live, and this is what a partnership is like. Just not even, and I don't say that in a blaming kind of way, but that's what it communicates to our kids. And if that's what it takes to get you through and out of a domestic violence situation, I mean, I've used my son to change who I am in so many different ways so that I can teach him how to be a better person.
Right. Right. And, you know, even if you're in a seemingly healthy relationship, marriage, and you're raising kids, if you have a problem with boundaries, it might not be, you know, like an emotional abusive or a domestic violence situation, but if you have a problem with boundaries, you're teaching your kids that too, whatever that is, whether you blow everyone else's boundaries out of the water or you have none. So there's, you're right. It's everything. And that's why most people say, like, I think I'm going to fail my kid. They're going to end up in therapy anyway. So, you know, I don't need to put the time in to heal. I don't subscribe to that at all. And I don't think you do either. I think our kids are the reason for us to heal.
Absolutely. One of the things that I did say, in a way to kind of give myself grace inside being a mom, is I would say, well, none of us get through life unscathed. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't like, so I don't have to do anything. I don't have to change. I don't have to fix. I don't have to reflect. You know, it was literally this way of giving myself grace for not knowing what I didn't know. And I guess I say that a lot. I've been told is that you're doing the best that you can with the tools and resources that you have at the time, but it's having that thought process that gives grace.
Definitely. I mean, perfectionism is a huge enemy, and especially as a mom. So I agree. I agree about giving grace. And, but I also believe, and you can speak to this too, that podcasts come into our life, a friend mentions something, you know, you watch something on TV, a movie comes up and there's a spark, it, you know, ignites something in you, or it moves something in you where you're like, ooh, something doesn't feel right. And it's our responsibility to explore, what does that mean? To go for a walk and say, okay, God, what is that? Like, where do you tap me on the shoulder? Why do I feel uncomfortable? But because then you can give yourself grace that you went into an uncomfortable place because something came up for you. You weren't sure what it was, versus just ignoring it and being like, yeah, I'm good. Everything's good. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, there's a difference there as far as once you have been exposed to something, you can't ignore it because then you are responsible for the outcome.
Yes, wholeheartedly. And it's sometimes before you're in to personal development, it's really hard to know what and understand what a trigger is. You know, it's just like, this thing happens and this is how I react. I've actually had this conversation with my son because when we have an emotion, when there's an event that happens and we react, right? There's a thought that happened, an emotion that came, and then there was the response. But we are so unaware of the thought and the emotion that we think that it's that we have no control in the action and the reaction. And that's what I'm trying to teach my almost 11-year-old right now, there's actually a thought that's creating an emotion, and then you have a reaction. I think there might even be a thing that I'm missing. I'm basing this off of a podcast that I found randomly before I wanted to be a coach, called the Life Coach School Podcast. And Brooke Castillo, maybe you know who she is, but she teaches, she has a life coach school and she has a podcast, and she's the one that taught me that there's an action, a thought, a feeling, something else maybe, and then a reaction. And I'm trying to pass that along to my kid.
Right. And I find that for those of us who grew up people pleasers, You know, we just knew that there was this like feeling. So like you're saying, before you dive into the self-development world or self-help world, there's feelings that we have that we just were taught to like stuff down, ignore, run away from in whatever way that we learn to do that. And for people pleasers, which are many, many women, I'm just going to speak for women that get involved in an abusive situation. We don't know what that means. So we're used to being so worried about someone being upset with us. Like that's like the worst thing it could be, if for someone to be upset with you, or they think you're a bitch. Those are like, you know, the two things that you don't ever want to be as a people pleaser. And so learning just that, because I teach this to my daughter too, piggybacking off of what you're teaching your son, I have taught her that she needs to pay attention when something happens, a conflict, someone's upset with them, or she's mad. Where do you feel it in your body? Do you feel it in your chest? Do you feel it in your stomach? And then just sort of identifying, like real quick, okay, I feel this weird knot in my stomach. So maybe I'm mad. Maybe I'm sad. I don't know, scared. But just take a deep breath before you make a choice.
So that is interesting, because that's a coaching technique that I use in my business, is, you know, identifying where the emotion shows up in your body. And the reason that I've been told that we do that is because we're basically identifying the fact that the emotion is not us, that there's a separation between me and this emotion, that this is something that's somewhat foreign in my body, right? So I'm identifying it. So I'm curious what you're telling your daughter. What is the purpose of identify where that shows up in your body, and for what purpose?
So having been raised, I shared custody, 60% me, 40% the ex-husband. So she was with him 40% of the time, and he is a huge covert narcissist. And what I mean by that is they're master manipulators, pathological liars, and brainwashers, basically. So, and, you know, he would basically brainwash her to not know her reality. So something would literally happen, and then he would tell her, no, that didn't happen. So she was being gaslit. She was being gaslit constantly. And he would deny her feelings of being valid. And so she, like all of us who are in those situations, whether we're being raised by parents like that or in a relationship, we learn to dissociate. And so for her, I noticed that she didn't, like, she would come to me all the time and say, Mom, I don't know who to believe. Just as far as like a, you know, a factual thing that happened. And she would say that she was anxious all the time, over the littlest things to the biggest things. And there was like no middle. So I realized she needed some kind of like gauge. She needed some kind of guidance system, like a GPS, which is what our guts are. And so I started talking to her about where she feels it when she gets scared, or where she feels it if dad yells, or if like a friend is upset with her, where does she feel it? And then we just started talking about what that might mean. That might mean she need, you know, she's not safe and she needs to find a safe place. Or that might mean that she's sad and needs to say something. So that's how I started it, because she was disconnected. And it goes back to what I said about being a people pleaser. You are disconnected from your feelings because you shove them down, ignore them, and run away, because at the cost of, you know, the relationship, whether it's with a parent or someone else, a friend, it costs too much to even feel that. And I didn't want her to start numbing out, basically.
Yeah, that's super interesting, because then the next thing that we usually do in coaching is express that emotion. So first you identify it. And we say, describe it. Like, if it had a color, or does it have a color? Does it have a shape? Is it solid? Is it flowy? Is it? And then, you know, sometimes depending on the tool, but one that's in my mind is called voicing the emotion. So if that, one of my friends had a flubber shaped feeling. And so I just named it Flubber. And I said, so if Flubber had, you know, could say something, what would it say? And it's just expressing it. And then a lot of times it goes away, or it changes shape and it gets softer and it gets, or it'll get brighter or duller or, you know, less sharp, whatever. So there's some kind of shift in it. So that's kind of what I use as a coaching tool. But that's interesting that you're just to identify it and be in her body. That's really powerful.
Yeah. I think it just came out of a place of knowing what, because I felt like when, as I was parenting her while she was being abused by him, that I was sort of like going back to where I was being abused by him. And I could remember, and I could see it happening. And there's something called cognitive dissonance, where again, you just like disconnect and you don't live in the reality that's really real because you're having all these trauma bonds and things. And so I started to see her do exactly what I did. And I was like, I don't know what I'm doing. And as far as then, you know, I wasn't a trained coach in any way. I was just a mom that was wanting to help her child. And, you know, so, and it helped because, and I started to even connect with movies, because I was seeing that she had very little empathy. And I thought, what's happening there? Because that's like another flag of a narcissist, is hardly any zero empathy. And I started seeing her at 8 and 9 years old have no empathy. And so we started watching movies where we were watching like Disney's classics, right? So watching like Tangled, and the mom is very abusive, very emotionally abusive to Rapunzel. And we started talking about stuff. And I was like, how am I using Disney movies to help her? I don't know, but it's working. Because I couldn't come out and say, your dad's a bully, your dad is harming you. I couldn't come out and say that. So I had to help her identify the feeling that she had when she watched Rapunzel be abused on screen. Oh, that's the same feeling I have when daddy yells at me. And so we started to make like connections where I would just say, okay, so this means that you're feeling, you know, we talk about what she was feeling. Is that scared? Is she mad? Is she sad? And we just started talking about it from there. So the survival.
Yeah. And that, I mean, it's powerful because, yeah, you can't come out, or you shouldn't. I don't like using should, but you know, there's probably, you know, there's definitely a detriment to your child when you come out and say negative things about a partner, about their other parent. And they have to come to that conclusion on their own. We can't do it for, we can't put that in their head and have it be healthy for the child. They have to get to that point on their own. And it's really hard when, especially in your situation, that you know what's going on. You know, you're however many years older than your daughter, and you lived with her dad, and you know what's going on, but you can't just come right out and say, you know what, he's a narcissist and you have to do this and this and this. That, like, that's a beautiful technique, and there's a lot of wisdom in movies and in storytelling and metaphors and whatnot. And I remember my son was at school and they watched, I think they watched a clip of Inside Out. Is that a Disney movie?
Yep. Yeah. Or it's Pixar, one of the two. Yeah.
Who knows? It's, yeah. And, but there's a scene where Joy is trying to be joyful with the toy of that Andy, is it Andy? Riley? Yeah. That Riley has stopped playing with the imaginary friend, and Joy is just trying to cheer up the imaginary friend. And Sadness just comes and sits down next to the imaginary friend and says, that really sucks. And my son was telling me about this because I was always joy for him. No matter what he was feeling, I was coming in as joy, trying to cheer him up. And he was like, sometimes I need sadness to come and sit down with me and empathize. And 100%, I still struggle with it. Not gonna lie. But it's very powerful to use these stories and what you did with your daughter. That's incredible.
Well, and your son is so in touch and aware, which I'm sure that's a lot because of you, right? To understand that and to know what he needs in certain times. That's amazing.
I'm very impressed with him all the time. I won't lie. But okay, so you used the word narcissist, and we kind of talked about this a little bit because a friend of mine said yesterday that the word narcissist is overused, which I agree, because that's a clinical diagnosis. And it's, you know, I've been told I was a narcissist by someone who was a friend of mine, and I was like, oh, okay. And just based on the words that you use to describe your ex-husband, I'm like, well, I'm not actually a narcissist, because I do have empathy for people. And I, you know, it's just the way that I was behaving with this friend was very one-sided and very selfish. And so that was the word. But what I asked you before we hit record was, does the word the overuse of the word narcissist annoy you?
And it does not. It does not. What I think, because, you know, it's been used traditionally for someone who's selfish. Like, that's how I grew up learning it. Someone's a narcissist. They love themselves. They like to look in the mirror. And so to me, that's how we kind of grew up understanding narcissist and narcissism. But as of the last, I don't know how many years, at least the last two, let's say two decades, right? So last 20 years. Now there's so many books written, and it's out in the public. It is a clinical diagnosis, which is very hard to actually get diagnosed. But it's out there. More people understand it. It doesn't bother me, because there's other things that bother me more. How about that? So if someone says they're a narcissist, I'm like, all right, whatever. You know, because I'm like, if we want to compare narcissists, we can play that game and I will win. I promise. but it's when I have shared with a friend or a family member or even just any person, any glimpse into what my daughter used to be subject to as far as abuse from her dad. And they say to me, well, I know that's really hard, but she's resilient. Kids are resilient. And as soon as someone says that, I literally want to stab their eyes out, because the last thing you want to hear is that your child is resilient after you've recounted the ways in which they are being detrimentally harmed. So that is something that most women will say that bothers them, because it's basically denying the reality and the reality of their children and sort of just making it like not a big deal. And it's sort of like everyone's regular divorce. And I think when you have gone through and your kids are still going through this type of abuse, that really, it really seeks to like minimize and almost erase a person's personhood, something that's unique about them. That's what this type of abuse does. You can't just allow someone to make it seem like it's just every other type of divorce, or the kid's going to go through hell and then they're going to rise in victory from the ashes when they're in their 20s. No, they're going to be completely, you know, devastated, and their whole life will be changed. So that bothers me. And most other women that are in this situation, that's a big pet peeve.
I can imagine that, because the one time that someone said kids are resilient where it really bothered me was when my best friend passed away suddenly without warning, and my son saw her as a second mom. Like, it the love that he had for her was quite equivalent to the love that he has for me. And like almost immediately after she passed, within days, he said, you know, I loved Shelly more than I love you, Mom. And I knew what he was trying to express with that, just that there was a connection that he had to her that is different than what he had with me. And when she passed and I expressed how I was worried about how he was feeling about her passing, and someone said, well, kids are resilient. And it's like, it is very dismissive of what he's going through. Is there something that you feel would be better to say in that situation? Like, is there something that you would have rather heard than kids are resilient?
Almost anything else, but pretty much empathy. So it could just be, you know, a lot of people don't have experience with this type of abuse. And thank God, I don't want a lot of people to have experience with this type of abuse. So for people who just have no context, it could just be, that must be really hard for her and for you. Boom. Like, that's it. That's it. I know you don't understand completely, but you get from a human level that it's not, you know, easy, it's hard, and it impacts our whole life. And that would be enough. That would be enough. A lot of people might say, you know, I'm so sorry that's happening. And that's fine too. A lot of people say that. Anything other than your kid's going to be fine, despite the fact that, you know, they're being gaslit, brainwashed, and lied to 24/7.
Yeah, that would be really, really hard. Now, do you help women? I think you said that you help them, they're in the situation already. Do you help them realize they're in the situation, or what is it that you help with?
So I actually work with women who have already left, because I found that I'm very triggered by women that are still in it, because they're not ready to see the truth. And I can't force anyone to see the truth. No one can. That has to be something that they come to on their own, or like me, and maybe like you, in whatever situation it was that your son was the catalyst for. For me, my daughter was the catalyst for me to finally say, I see the truth, and I'm not willing to accept it as my life anymore because of her. She deserves better. So I work with women who are already out. And so it could be that they're separated or the divorced, and they're having to share custody with their abuser. And I use that phrase very specifically, because an abuser could be someone who, let's say, on one end of the scale, they just constantly lie. They're kind of a jerk, you know, they like to make your life hard. Okay. And then they're kind of like mean to the kids. Then you have the opposite end, and there's a lot of people in between the opposite end, where, you know, they are covertly abusing the children. They are pinning them against you, and that's called parental alienation or abuse by proxy. And that's like really kind of like diabolical if you're trying to get to that side of things. And then there's more. I don't want to go into it too deeply, but I help women that are anywhere on that scale to be able to find their voice. A lot of times, even though women have bravely and courageously left their abuser, left the situation, which is a huge, huge victory, then we still are living separately, but still enmeshed, still attached to the ex. And he still controls and he still abuses. And for a lot of us, we need to learn how to use our voice, and we need to learn how to put up healthy boundaries. And then that's the kind of thing that we were talking about earlier, like our kids see what we're doing. So I know lots of women, myself included, I was separated. We were living separated for 1 to 2 years, sharing custody. And I thought, you know, like, I'm free, you know. But meanwhile, every time we had a custody exchange, the ex thought he could just hug me, and my arms were by my side, and he's hugging me, and he's not getting the point because he doesn't care. He wants to do what he wants to do. He wanted to intimidate me and harass me. And so because I thought it was bad to put up a boundary or negative in front of my kid, I didn't do anything. And that just led to all sorts of problems, mostly anger at myself. And so I finally got to the point where I said, okay, like I can't, I'm showing her how to basically be abused, harassed, and bullied and make it okay. And so that just started, you know, me down a whole path of standing up for myself. And that's the kind of thing that I would help a woman who continues to say she's being harassed, feels out of control, or is afraid to say no to her ex-husband. So that's like just a glimpse into the type of situation that I would help.
Yeah, when you were describing earlier, when you were describing a people pleaser, I was like, oh, I remember. I remember. I remember the, I say I'm a recovering people pleaser because it does, I don't think it ever really goes away 100%. Like it's always still like there just a little bit. You know, that not wanting to feel like the B word. I don't even like if someone is describing what I'm doing. Or the other day I was, you know, I'm an auditory processor. And so I will talk things out that bother me. And my boyfriend is my person. Like he's the one that, you know, I have other people that I talk to too, but I will talk to him. And we were talking about this snow trip that I've mentioned on my podcast a couple of times, but we were going to the snow and I was like 10 days postpartum. And there was a whole level of drama in my head about this snow trip because I was wanting to people please. I had spent months of I can't because I was pregnant to, okay, I'm not pregnant anymore. And this was my first C-section. So every other pregnancy, I was like up and working 3 days later. And I was, you know, 10 days postpartum and we're talking about going to the snow. And I'm like, I don't want to say no to things anymore. I don't want to be this person that doesn't get to do stuff and doesn't get to participate or doesn't want to participate. I want to be this person that is part of the family and having fun with everybody. And I'm physically scared of going. And, you know, he used the B word to describe what I was doing. He's like, I'm kind of tired of you bitching about it. And I was like, but that's not what's happening. And he goes, oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean it that way. And so, you know, so we like had this whole conversation about it, but like that was last month. That was, and I've done a lot of work, not specifically on people pleasing, but like I resonate with that quite a bit. And it's amazing what you do and what you help women to do. And I love that you've recognized where your trigger is and where your boundary is inside your business and who you can help and who you can't, because that's a huge part of having a business.
Right. Right. Well, you know, women would come to me that were still in this situation and they kept thinking, he's going to change. He's going to change. He's going to change. And I thought, no, he's not. No, he's not. You know, and you can't tell someone that doesn't want, that's in denial because I lived there for a long time. So yes, boundaries inside of business, boundaries just even with our family of origin. So that's where I've gotten to really exercise a lot of my boundaries as well. I was raised by a narcissist dad. He was a total different flavor than the ex-husband. So I thought I was getting away from that. But I mean, the boundary, learning how to set boundaries, as you know, is like one of the most, I don't want to say coveted, maybe just fruitful life skills I think that we can have for ourselves and teach our kids. Because not only does it keep the bad out, it keeps the good in. And that's something that I like to help women do because they feel depleted. They feel controlled and they feel like they don't have joy or even energy for when their kids are with them. And so, but a lot of times it's because there's no boundary. And even this woman the other day, she said to me that she kind of blew up on her ex. She's like, and I keep it together 99% of the time and I just couldn't take it anymore. And I said, well, that's a problem because holding it in 99% of the time is the problem. She doesn't have, you know, healthy boundaries. So that was just an example. So we're working through that.
It's interesting that we talk in my coaching community, we talk about it a lot that, you know, that we identify something as the problem, but it's actually like perfectionism isn't the problem. It's actually the solution to the problem, because the problem is how you talk to yourself when you mess up. That's the problem. The perfectionism is your solution to the problem. Because if you could be perfect, then you're not going to beat yourself up. But it actually, you know, stops you from doing things. And when you don't meet the expectation of perfectionism, because who can, then you go beat yourself up. So there's, it's a very circular problem.
Yes. And that's interesting you brought that up, because people pleasers tend to also be perfectionists. And we also take in the voices of our parents. Maybe it was a mom or a dad or both. And my mom was wonderful. But I definitely took on her voice of, and a lot of it was when a mistake would be made, oh, what's wrong with you? Or, you know what I mean? Or if, when she was parenting us, if we made a mistake, what's wrong with you? And, you know, it's taken me a long time to get that voice out of my head for my own self when I would do something. And instead of saying, what's wrong with you? I mean, like, that's like the worst thing that you can say to yourself or your children. And I've worked really hard on healing that. And in a couple of years ago, here's an example where it finally kind of came to fruition and I was so proud. So my daughter got an award at school. This is pre-pandemic. Okay, so like, but anyway, she got an award at school and the teacher had alerted me that she was getting this award. And this was a time when we had a protective order, we still do, from her dad. And so her dad wasn't going to be there. So I was the only one that could be there. And it was the middle of an afternoon, a Tuesday afternoon, and I get a text from one of her friend's moms. And it's a picture of my kid with her award standing with her teacher. And she's like, aren't you so proud of her? And I was like, and in that moment, I think I said some explicatives, you know, I was mad at myself, which I said just for like a couple seconds. And I got up and I walked around my house. And then I said, I took a deep breath and I was like, no, give yourself grace. Like, and that was a moment, that was a turning point for me, because I wanted to just beat myself up and I'm the worst mom. And how could I do this? She only has one parent right now, all that. And I was like, give yourself grace. You know, you're doing the best that you can. Because literally I was. And that was just a turning point. But that's an example of like that perfectionism that I just, that we can all overcome and recognize, like, you're right, it's not the problem. Problem was thinking that I had to, I didn't want to disappoint anybody. And I had to always like show up in a certain way for everybody all the time, which is not feasible. We make mistakes. We forget to put stuff on our calendar.
Oh yeah. I was in a car accident, right at the end of my pregnancy. I was 33 weeks that day actually. And, I had prided myself on the fact that I had literally never forgotten to pick my son up or been late, I don't think, to pick him up. Not like legit what late, right? Where the school had to call me late. And my son, and I was always like, I've never forgotten you. So why are you worried that I'm going to forget you? Like, I don't understand that. And then I forgot because, and it doesn't matter. So I forgot. The schedule changed. That's why I forgot. And I thought he was going to take, thought he was taking the bus home, but the bus actually got out, or the school got out at 3 instead of 1:45. And I knew that the bus, I realized that the school was out later. I realized it, but he didn't get on the bus. He thought I was picking him up. Anyway, they called me. So I jumped in the car. I said, I'll be there in 5 minutes. And then I got into an accident on the way, and I was hyperventilating, talking, calling. The first thing that I did was call the school, and I said, I've been in a fender bender, and it was like super minor fender bender, but I was hyperventilating because I was like, I'm late to pick him up, or I'm on my way, but I got hit by a car, so I'm on my way. But I had to, like, I don't know. I don't even remember why I brought this up, but like, there was this grace that I had to give myself. Like, okay, number one, things happened and I didn't pick him up on time. Like, there was a miscommunication. It's fine. He's fine. I'm fine. Everybody's fine. We don't need to, there doesn't need to be any kind of beating myself up about it. And what ended up happening is I ended up spending 5 days in the hospital. And this is kind of my huge thing for me, was that I didn't warn him that I might end up staying in the hospital. And he's on the spectrum, and things out of the norm are possibly more disruptive to him. And I didn't even say goodbye. I didn't hug him. I didn't nothing. I said, hey, I'm going to the hospital just to check to make sure the babies are okay. I love you. Bye. Like, and then I didn't see him for 5 days. And somebody asked me after the fact, they said, do you feel guilty about that? And I was like, no, because I didn't know. If I had known, I would have done something, I would have done differently, but I didn't know. There's no way I could have known that would happen. I felt fine, you know? So that was my big one. Like, aha, I've gotten past this mom guilt thing and the perfectionism and all of the things. But still there was a panic of like, I forgot my kid. I forgot to pick him up. But it's all good. I'm here.
Well, and then you're giving him permission to be human as well. Right. Yeah.
Yes. And we do that by healing our trauma and not passing it along to them. Is there a piece of advice that you want to share with moms?
Do we have 5 more hours? No. So, you know, we talked about perfectionism and giving ourselves grace. That's a huge one. I talked about healthy boundaries, which is another huge one. And I think that the best gift that we can do is, like you said, is healing our trauma. But someone might not think they've been through trauma. So, you know, perhaps it's more of what kind of person do you want your kids to be? You know, what kind of person do you want them to be? And if you want them, most moms would say healthy, productive, you know, member of society, right? Like polite, have a good job. But I would just say, I would encourage any mom that's listening to go deeper than that. Go deeper. Because most people will end up like that. Most of us, you know, most of our kids would end up like that. What else do you want? And when you keep asking, what else would I want? What else? And like, you go deeper and deeper and deeper. And then you're going to get to the places that you actually either need to heal or have healed, like hurts that you had from your childhood that you don't want to pass on. And I'd say that is like the essence of how you can really bless your children more than just organic meals, more than just let's take care of screen time. Like, get to that root of what do you really want for them that either you didn't have or is the opposite, and then work to give them that.
I love that so much, and that you were curious about, or you were alluding to the catalyst for my change. And it was that, because I heard my coach and teacher tell me or tell say on a pot on a something on a webinar to he was specifically in the process of writing his book called Daddy, Are You Proud of Me? And it's written for the father-daughter relationship. He was a guest on my podcast. And he wrote the book, and part of it was saying to the dad, write down everything that you want your daughter to look for in a partner, and then become that man. Because, you know, a lot of times we try to heal our parenting issues, our issues with our parent, by marrying the exact same person. And in your case, a similar traits, narcissism, right? And even though it was a different brand, which I thought was, or a different flavor, I don't remember. Did you say brand or flavor?
I said flavor, yes.
Different flavor, that was cute. But that was the catalyst, is because he said, you know, that little girls grow up and children grow up wanting to be like the parent that is the same gender as them, and they want to marry the partner or the parent that is the opposite. And that scared the crap out of me on both fronts. I was like, I don't want him marrying somebody like who I used to be. And I didn't want him becoming his dad either. And so that's honestly, that's how I searched for my current partner. And it's how I became the kind of person that I would hope that my son would be in a relationship with.
Yeah, absolutely. Most, like I said, a lot of people just don't identify with having trauma. So I think you're right on. I mean, what's the point of raising kids exactly how we were raised unless you had just the most awesome, healthy, emotionally healthy and safe family, which is so rare. It does exist, but it's rare. So if that's not the case, then there's got to be something that, and it's not just, well, I was poor, so I want to give my kids everything they want. There's so much more than that, right? Because there's a whole belief system that comes from poverty and a belief system that comes from abundance or, you know, affluence. So it's more than that. And so that's why I think it's great. If you have a mom listening to your podcast, obviously they are someone who wants to go deeper and, you know, and help their kids in the ways that really matter. Because I remember I used to get upset about, you know, the ex feeding my kid McDonald's because I was all like on this organic kick. But honestly, that matters hardly at all compared to other things that are more important.
So true. And I realized that I would get mad at my ex for doing anything that was not like the way that I would do it. Just period, like anything. And I was like, okay, you need to calm down a little bit. Like, he needs variety and he needs to experience different things. He's feeding him. And the one thing that I specifically told my ex-husband not to do was say, don't tell mom. It's like, because it's futile. He's going to tell mom. And that's not the message that I want my son learning, that he can't tell mom stuff, because I'm the primary. He has to be able to tell me stuff. So it was, for me, that was like a survival thing. Like, that was a protection. Yeah. Don't say, don't tell mom.
That's awesome.
So is there a book? My dog just yawned and barked. I don't know if you could hear that, but is there a book that's been instrumental in your personal development journey?
Yes. I mean, there's been many, but if I had to pick one, it would literally be the Bible, because for me, coming out of an abusive marriage and childhood, different type, or like not as bad. Oh, if I could say it like that, but coming out of just a whole lifetime of narcissistic abuse of various flavors, I really did not understand my worth at all, like at all. And so, and I felt so unworthy when someone would help. Okay. Like if someone would, sometimes there have been a few times in my single momhood where I was struggling financially, and literally a check would come in the mail from a friend and I would be sobbing, mostly because I felt so unworthy. And I remember just getting to the point where thinking, this is not okay, because this is not like healthy, first of all. And second of all, someone thinks I'm worthy. So I said, okay, God, if you think I'm worthy, then show me what you say about me. And so I started to actually Google, what does the Bible say about worth? What does the Bible say about worthiness? And I would just start to look at those verses. And for me, that is where I started to just not feel different at first, but borrow belief. I borrowed God's belief about what he said about me. So I would write down, God says, I am a masterpiece, his masterpiece, you know, I am loved, I am chosen. Like I would start saying those things out loud, not feeling them at first. And then eventually I started to believe them because I made it a habit to say that out loud. And it shifted everything for me.
I love that. And the thing that I love most about that is it's practical, applicable advice. I'm taking that as advice too. But because I just had somebody ask about how to change their belief of themselves. And, you know, I gave an answer, you know, by telling yourself that. And I love that you searched through it, or through the Bible, you know, as that's your belief system. And that's, you know, because where, who better to define your worth than the person that created you? I remember somebody saying, you know, God didn't have time to create a nobody. He didn't put you on this earth and say, well, this one sucks, but I'm going to let her be there. He didn't do that with anyone. And so that means that you have a purpose here. And that means that there's something for you. And I love that you shared that.
Well, and especially as moms, I mean, God's given us authority to raise and shape his children. So yeah, we do, especially any mom that's listening right now, right? That is your follower, you know, likes what you're putting out and how you help other women and moms, especially, we do have a purpose. And a lot of times it's more than just our kids. It could be for other moms, like what you're doing or what I'm doing. But then it trickles down to kids. So it is a blessing and an honor to be able to be here, speak to you, and just be able to just be able to help other women. It's an honor.
I appreciate that. I appreciate you being here, and I want you to tell us where our listeners can find you, for those that resonate with your message and what you do and find themselves on that spectrum.
Yeah, the easiest thing is to go to my website and book a quick connection call so we can get connected and I can point you to resources. And my website is thesurvivorcenter.com.
I love that. It's easy to find, and expresses exactly what you do. So that's awesome. Well, again, thank you so much for being here today. And we're going to have another episode of Imperfect Momming for you all next week. And until then, keep healing. Bye, guys.
Thank you for tuning in to Imperfect Momming. It's time for us to step up and realize that our power is not in trying to shape our children. Our power lies in shaping ourselves into the people we want our children to model themselves after. Don't just do it for your kids. Do it for yourself. When you become a more self-aware, compassionate, and confident person, you and everyone around you benefit. For more information about me and my work, visit alishalyons.com. That's alishalyons.com. See you next time.